You are listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation, a national nonprofit founded on the belief that every pregnancy deserves a happy ending. My guest for this episode is Susanna Hopkins Lesher. She's the chair of the International Stillbirth Alliance and co-chair of the Stillbirth Advocacy Working Group. Susanna is the mother of three living sons and Wilder, who was stillborn on July 13th, 1999. Susanna, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Before we get into the subject matter at hand, I always want to know how people get into this crazy topic, this topic that so many people just land in. Some people choose it for other reasons. Other people have personal experiences. But can you tell us a little bit how you ended up in the pregnancy loss and stillbirth space?
Sure. So my first son, my first child and first son, Wilder, was stillborn almost 21 years ago, July 13th, 1999. He was stillborn at full term, 38 and a half weeks after a perfect pregnancy, and we never found out the cause. So that's kind of the short answer of why I care about stillbirth. Like most women and men who, to whom this happens, I had barely heard of stillbirth before my child was stillborn, and I certainly didn't expect it was going to happen to me. Wilder was 6 pounds, 12 ounces. He was perfectly formed as far as I knew. We had an autopsy done. We had genetic this, that, and the other done, and bottom line was that nobody knew what had happened. I went on to have three other living sons who are now 16, 18, and 19. And at the time that Wilder was born, I was in the middle of a career that I really loved, which was working on poverty reduction globally, mostly with nonprofits. So I was living in Vietnam. I lived and worked in Vietnam for 10 years, and I did work in a lot of other regions of the world with women and ethnic minorities and working on water supply and irrigation and credit and savings and so forth. But I gradually became had a feeling of disconnect, a growing feeling of disconnect between myself and my career, even though I did love my career. And finally in 2011, my family, I quit my job at the time. We were back in the States, and I was at that time the vice president of programs for a small nonprofit called Trickle Up, which is based in New York City and works to reduce extreme poverty. I left that job. We took a year living off the grid in the woods of Maine, and it was during that year that I realized that what I had always seen as my personal issue, stillbirth, had a huge overlap with my professional issue of poverty work and inequity, in the sense that about 98% of stillbirths globally are in low and middle income countries. And although my own loss was not related to poverty or inequity, the majority of stillbirths do have that as a setting. And so I started kind of trying to learn a little bit more about stillbirth from a non-personal perspective. And that's where I first encountered the word epidemiology, which I'd never heard before. And of course, these days, at this moment, it's a hot topic for other reasons. And I decided that I would go back to school. And I should back up. I also, after leaving Vietnam, we moved to Australia. We were in Australia for 3 years, where my youngest son was born. And it was there that I first heard of the International Stillbirth Alliance. I had wanted to do something, quote unquote, as a bereaved mom. And so I hooked up with SANS, the Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Society in Australia, in Queensland specifically. And I started volunteering as a peer counselor There. And I did that for a couple of years while I was living in Brisbane, and it was wonderful. But I wanted to do more. And because of my global poverty reduction work, I was interested in sort of the global perspective. And so I asked my friends at SANS if they knew what I could do. And they said, well, have you heard of ISA, the International Stillbirth Alliance? They said it's the only global organization that that works on stillbirth at a global level. So I reached out, I emailed Vicky Flanady, who happens to also be in Brisbane, and I introduced myself, and she said, do you want to help with editing the newsletter? And I said, sure. So for a few years, starting in 2007, I edited the ISA newsletter, and then we moved our family back to the States. I took up this position with Trickle Up, and I got too busy to do any more volunteering with ISA. But then when I quit Trickle Up, and we took our year off as a family, and I started learning about epidemiology, ISA came back into my mind. And the International Stillbirth Alliance, one of our main events, our biggest sort of action is our annual stillbirth-focused global conference. And in 2011, it was in Antigua in the Caribbean. And I went for the first time to the ISA conference. I had always wanted to attend. I had known about the conferences for several years, but this was the first time that I could go. And I actually went with a broken leg on crutches, which is another story. And it was there that I finally met Vicky and other people who I only knew by name. And I'm getting chills right now because I can tell you, you know, I entered the sort of down at the mouth hotel where the conference was being held, and I had just gotten off the plane, and there was a group of people in the lobby sitting, you know, on chairs and stuff, and I was swept into a sort of virtual embrace. Here were, you know, people who were scientists and researchers and medical doctors, and I was, you know, quote, just a parent, unquote. And it did not matter. There were, number one, there were bereaved parents there. And number two, the people who weren't bereaved but who were there also got it. And I just immediately realized that I had found my tribe. And there, you know, I mean, now, so that was back in 2011. And that's how I became involved with epidemiology. I'm currently a doctoral student in epidemiology at Columbia University, starting my dissertation. And I'm been involved in stillbirth prevention research through Vicky's mentorship since 2012, when she gave me room to start, even quote, just as a parent, unquote, to truly contribute to actual research. And then I started learning through other colleagues and dear friends about the situation of stillbirth globally and how to and the need for stillbirth advocacy at a global level. I'd been involved in advocacy work on poverty in my prior career, so I was familiar with that as a tool. But so it all just kind of things, the ball started to really get rolling in 2011 in Antigua. But that sensation of being with my tribe and of a place where, you know, when I had Wilder, I was inadvertently sort of signed on as I always think of it as a member of the club. You don't want to be a member of the club, but you are the club of moms and other people who, dads and so forth, who've lost their babies in this way. And, you know, inside that club, you can be relaxed and, be confident that people get it. And, it's a very nourishing place, and I've been really privileged and happy to be a part of it since then. So that's a really long-winded answer.
One thing about your story that fascinates me is we have found through the Star Legacy Foundation that when families get interested in stillbirth advocacy, it's usually immediately after their loss or soon thereafter, And then there's that 2 to 3 year window where they're very involved, they're very interested. And then naturally, they get distracted by career and other life milestones. And oftentimes, they start to trickle away a little bit.
Yeah.
You had a very opposite effect
right, where
12 years after your loss of Wilder, you found your tribe and you found it 12 years after the fact. How did that happen exactly?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think there were a couple of factors, very different factors. One was that when I lost Wilder, I was living in Vietnam, and thank God we had actually gone back to the States to give birth, not knowing. And I'm so grateful we did, because we had, except for my baby dying, we had a very positive experience in terms of our support. And had we been in Vietnam at the time, it would have been very different. But there was zero in terms of, there's no such thing as a support group in Vietnam. There's nothing. So, and I lived, we stayed in Vietnam for another 4 years after Wilder's death. So in a time where I was very wrapped up in my poverty work. So that was one thing that where I there was no even possibility of being a peer supporter and anything like that. And of course, the internet was pretty, still pretty spotty, at least in Vietnam at that time. So I think, maybe my natural inclination to be very involved and engaged couldn't be satisfied in those first years. So that's, and then we went to Australia for 3 years and where I finally was able to start being a peer supporter. So that's one thing that delayed my engagement. But I think the other thing was that I use the word lucky, and I think, bereaved parents and stuff will get it, lucky is it's a weird word. I mean, lucky and unlucky. It was convenient that my professional work happened to have this enormous overlap with stillbirth. And so, I'd been doing participatory research for, 20 years. I'd been focused on, inequitable, allocation of resources and raising voices of marginalized people for two decades. I mean, just not on stillbirth. I was the head of Oxfam Hong Kong's program in Vietnam for 5 years. I did a lot of team leadership, and it said I had a lot of sort of those kind of soft skills that lend themselves to work on stillbirth as well. And so there's a lot of potential for translation of my skill set to this realm. And the other thing is, that's the second reason why perhaps that can explain why I went towards and rather than away from further work on stillbirth was this overlap of the personal and professional for me. And then the other thing was, very ironically, my undergrad degree is in math. I'm a quant person, despite my sort of qualitative research focus in my poverty work. I actually have roots in sort of quantitative interests, and I really love numbers, and stillbirth needs a lot of number crunching, and there's not a lot of numbers going on out there, and we need advocacy to get more numbers on the table. My epidemiology studies have brought me into the world of biostats, which I love, and I kind of have that set of interests as well, which I actually didn't get a lot of opportunity to pursue as part of my poverty work. So I'm just parenthetically relishing that component of work on stillbirth prevention and global stillbirth advocacy. So it's a weird sort of alignment of things. And it's also, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about stillbirth and about Wilder today, because, man, I could talk about him, 24/7. I know a lot of stillbirth bereaved parents feel that way. And this is a way of keeping his memory green for me. And people have different ways of doing that. But for me, it's this. So,
I don't know. That's wonderful. Let's talk a little bit about the International Stillbirth Alliance. I know you've talked very broadly about what the goal of the alliance is, but can you talk a little bit about what the goals and the plans are for the next couple of years, especially with you being chair of the organization?
Yeah, absolutely. ISA, our sort of value added, quote unquote, is really twofold. Number one, although we're very small and all volunteer, we are in fact the only organization that's focused on stillbirth and works at a global level. And having been involved in various initiatives over the last 5 to 6 years, I can say for sure that there isn't any other organization out there that fills this niche. And so that's one component of our value added. And the other is my wonderful experience, exemplified by my wonderful experience in starting in Antigua at the conference there, which is that it's also an organization that includes parents and clinicians and researchers, as well as policymakers, and this wonderful overlap and inclusion of these groups, which so often, unfortunately, are sort of relegated to different, boxes. That's something that in ISA we don't have, and we're always working towards more and more enmeshing of the different stakeholder groups, and that's the second really fantastic characteristic of ISA. And so, with that in mind, I would say that my focus as the chair of ISA and our focus collectively on the board as we go forward is really fourfold. That I'm looking to make this to increase the sustainability of the organization, to increase the accountability of our organization, to really reach out to the global community, and to continue to be action oriented and data driven. And I can tell you what each of those means for me, at least as the chair. In terms of sustainability, I have to put that first. People who work in the area of stillbirth, certainly at a global level, are very well aware that there is absolutely pathetically little funding out there. excuse me. And, at ISA, I recently spoke to somebody just in a UN organization as I was discussing sort of funding needs, and the person to be unnamed, a stillbirth supporter, really had to have me repeat a couple times that we literally don't have any funded staff, at all in ISA or in the advocacy working group. The person couldn't believe that we've been able to produce all that we've produced without any staff. And so, but really to go forward for sustainability purposes, we have got to have some staff. Those staff need to be they need to be funded for several years at least, so that we can stop relying only on volunteers who are also doing their own clinical work or research and so forth. I mean, as part of Star Legacy, we know what how hard it is to get things done when you have to rely on volunteers. Also, as part of sustainability, we are looking to increase our regional offices. We have one in Australia that sort of serves that area of the world, and also to proactively increase our membership. So I put that first, even though that's really the architecture of ISA and not our reason for being. But with my roots in the nonprofit world for going on 30 years, I know that you cannot get stuff done if you don't have really strong bones in your organization. And so that's got to go first. And second is accountability. One of the things we're working on at ISA is to improve our accountability to bereaved parents and bereaved families, to reach out to low and middle income country individuals. And also to one of the things that we've just done in the last year is to agree to the biological reality and clinical reality that newborn deaths are on the continuum that stillbirth is on, and that we need to and want to embrace newborn death, bereaved parents, and newborn death as part of our mission to prevention of newborn deaths and support of bereaved parents after newborn death as well. And another component of accountability. So those portions of accountability are sort of, I'd say, reaching downward towards people who have been bereaved. But also we want to reach upward, and we want to really ensure that, as ISA, that we have a seat at the table at global levels. And I'm happy to say that that is starting to happen. I, as a representative of ISA, I'm now on the Every Newborn Action Plan Management team, and you can be sure that I will be speaking up for stillbirth at every chance that I get. The third component of our plans is to really continue to build our global community. And one of the visions that I have is that we've actually had 15 annual stillbirth conferences so far, and they've been on every continent except Antarctica. Really fantastic. But one thing that we haven't managed to do is to really build a network of all of those local organizations and individuals that attended each one of those conferences. And that's been really a lack of, as much of anything, a lack of funding and staffing to make that happen. So that's a vision that I have. We're also planning to have stillbirth or ISA conferences and country workshops in South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa in the coming couple of years. And that'll be very exciting because those are areas we haven't been successful at, very successful at reaching out to. And of course, that's where the bulk of stillbirths occur. And then finally, we're going to continue to be action-oriented and data-driven through our three working groups. We have the Stillbirth Advocacy Working Group, the Prevention Working Group, headed by Floriska Kortweg in the Netherlands and Vicky in Australia, and the Bereavement Working Group, headed by Caroline Homer headed by Dimitris Siasikos on the ISA board. And each of those working groups has specific actions that we're undertaking. The Bereavement Working Group is working on global guidelines for bereavement support after stillbirth. The Prevention Working Group, among other things, is working on a new classification system for causes of stillbirth and newborn death. And the Advocacy Working Group, I did an hour ago, is to submit a bid to the Partnership for Maternal, Child, and Newborn Health, which is housed at the World Health Organization in Geneva, for our first funding from them to do two projects to raise parent voices at a global level. One is a parent support organization registry. We're going to be researching and finding parents, formal and informal parent support organizations in every country in the world. We're going to start with the high burden regions, and we'll put that registry up on the ISA website. And the other project will be to create an advocacy toolkit for parent support organizations so that they can learn how to raise their voices within their own countries in health policy settings, health policy making settings. So that's a heck of a lot, but we have some fantastic people who are able somehow to scrape together minutes of their time to push these actions forward. So yeah, again, another long answer, but
no, it's important and wonderful. And I want to talk a little bit more about the working group, which you are the co-chair of, the Advocacy Working Group. And we know that the goals are to increase the visibility of stillbirth in global policy agencies and their initiatives, including the World Health Organization, UNICEF, Every Newborn Action Plan. Why is this working group important, and what are your plans for working with these groups moving forward?
Right. So, the hardest parts for me of sort of wading into the stillbirth waters was at the global level was all these acronyms and organizations. I never heard of any of them. I mean, I had heard of a few of them through my poverty work, so I knew about, you know, UNICEF, obviously. But people threw around acronyms and initiatives and processes and platforms, and I didn't know what anybody was talking about back in 2011. And now I know a lot more. And I think that it's hard sometimes to get a perspective at a global level of what role stillbirth plays, and of why these global entities such as the World Health Organization, UNFPA, UNICEF, why they are important to us as bereaved parents or clinicians or researchers in our own countries interested in stillbirth prevention and bereavement support. And, you know, the reason is that, for example, the World Health Organization really plays a huge role in responding to and also guiding health policy in actual countries, which then plays out as budget allocations and staffing of health initiatives, gathering of health-related data, and the actions of health workers on the ground at the local level. And it is certainly not, I'm not meaning to say that the UN sets health policies in country, but decisions that are made by UN, United Nations bodies, are decisions of the member countries, and they who inform and then go on to implement those decisions. And one of the enormous steps forward for stillbirth was in 2014, when the UN General Assembly signed on to the Every Newborn Action Plan, and that was led with a Herculean effort by Joy Lawn of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and Save the Children, as well as many others. And that ENAP, E-N-A-P, that was the very first global entity that set a target for the global stillbirth rate, and the target is to reduce the stillbirth rate to 12 per thousand by 2030. There are two goals of the Every Newborn Action Plan. The other one was a newborn death target, and that architecture being established at the highest level then has played out all over the world as individual countries have created their own Every Newborn Action Plans, as midwifery staffing and training and nursing staffing and training and data analysis, data gathering has begun to gradually align in many cases with the goals of the Every Newborn Action Plan. And so for those of us who are taking a global view of stillbirth, it's crucial to be engaged at the global level, and also to see when nations and UN and other global entities are not sort of adhering to those global targets. And so the Stillbirth Advocacy Working Group, which was originally established by the Partnership for Maternal Newborn Child Health in 2016, and then they established it, they ran it for 6 months, and then they cut funding to zero. And it was at that point that I, at the International Stillbirth Alliance, and Hannah Blanco at the London School for Hygiene and Tropical Medicine jumped in and said, "We can't let this group die. We're going to co-chair it for as volunteers." And I just have to say that the person who had been hired by PMNCH to be paid to chair that group for 6 months literally laughed at me on the phone as I explained that Hannah and I would be doing this as volunteers. And here we are 4 years later, and, you know, still a volunteer organization, and we're doing great. So I think, I think that's been a big success and victory. But in any case, one of the biggest sort of outputs that the Advocacy Working Group has created is the Global Scorecard. We had looked at the Lancet's Ending Preventable Stillbirth series that was put out in 2016, which ISA had a lot to do with, and I was involved with as well. And that Lancet series set out a call to action for global stillbirth prevention and bereavement support that was based on the Every Newborn Action Plan target of stillbirth reduction. And also, I was part of the team to really review that call to action in the Lancet series. And one of the things that I, as a bereaved parent, and others involved insisted on was to include non-mortality related targets related to stigma reduction and bereavement support, which are so often sort of sidelined as we prioritize mortality reduction. But in any case, The problem was, as we know, with the lots of these calls to action, you know, they get published and then they get forgotten. And so in the stillbirth advocacy working group, we said, we don't want that call to action to be forgotten. So we developed a very simple scorecard that includes targets for that are related to each of the components of the call to action and pulls together global data that's already being collected as part of other processes to track progress and lack of progress and lack of data on that call to action. And so we've got we've been doing this for 2 years. We've got two years of data, and many other groups, including the Star Legacy, have been very interested in creating country-specific versions of the scorecard. But that's an example of the type of action that we've taken to shed light on progress and lack of progress and the need for progress. I would say that it can be daunting to kind of wade into the global waters because of all the, you know, these people who are sort of been working at a global level forever and are very comfortable, know each other and, you know all the acronyms and know all the, you know, sort of policymaking approaches and what to do and what not to do. It can be very daunting, especially as a bereaved parent, especially as a non-clinician. And that's, in fact, one of the reasons that we have just submitted this bid to create an advocacy toolkit for parent support organizations to say, you don't need to be afraid. If you're interested in getting involved in policy, you can do it, you can learn, and here's how. So,
well, that's a great segue into my final question, which is, most of the people who listen to this podcast, myself included, live in the United States and are therefore, for the most part, focused on stillbirth advocacy in their own backyard. I think we feel like it's more a problem we can solve. It's smaller, it's more achievable, and the idea of doing something at the global level just feels so big and inaccessible. Are there things that families, health professionals, other local organizations who may be listening to this podcast and connected to the Star Legacy Foundation, what they can do to support your efforts?
Well, thanks for that question. And yes, I totally get that. And I think that, you know, I think that completely understandably and logically, the majority of parents and families or clinicians, whoever, who are interested in stillbirth prevention and support are going to be focused locally. And that's so crucial and critical. And at the same time, they may be interested in just being more informed about stillbirth work at a national or global level, or they may even be interested in thinking about moving in that direction. So I think there are a number of things that you can do if you're interested as an individual or an organization in finding out more. You know, obviously, say you can go to the International Stillbirth Alliance website. We just did relaunch a new website, which has a resources tab, and I'm responsible for getting those resources on the resources tab. So I can tell you it's a work in progress, but we're trying to get more and more resources up there. And I would say the first thing is to start doing a bit of reading. That's how I came to the field of epidemiology in 2011. I just started doing a little bit of reading. And so we're trying to provide a wide range of resources so that people can inform themselves. So that's one thing that you can do. Another thing that you can do is you can So Star Legacy is working with us on a high income version of the global scorecard, and in fact, just last week we sent out a high income version of the scorecard to colleagues in many high income countries, and I know Star Legacy, I'm sure, will be working with us on that, and they have their own scorecard for the U.S. and the U.S. scorecard is on the Star Legacy website. I would encourage people to take a look at it, if you're part of a parent support group, maybe obviously not for fresh losses, but perhaps for people whose losses are a little bit farther back in time, you may want to discuss to have a meeting to discuss what you have learned from looking at the data on the on the U.S. country scorecard, it can be surprising to see where data is and is not available. There are differences from state to state. There are differences in stillbirth numbers within states between Black and white and Hispanic families, and you know, start to think about some of the implications of all that data for the reality of stillbirth prevention in your own local area. You're certainly very welcome to reach out. To also, another thing that you can do is in the advocacy working group, we welcome anyone to join. You can be an individual or an organization. If you're interested in joining, you can email me or Hannah Blanco. I'm at shleisher@aol.com to let us know whether you'd be interested in joining the advocacy working group. And there you can talk to other interested individuals about what to do with the data availability, lack of data, and what steps that you might want to take in your own area. Also, I think that we're always hoping to get more media attention to the stillbirth numbers and to inequity in stillbirth rates and to lack of support services and lack of research dollars and so forth. So I'd really encourage people to drum up interest from their local media, social media. Please get out there. Follow us at ISA Stillbirth, #ISA Stillbirth, but also see if you can get a local media interested in an interview like this one, or either in print or an interview. I would also urge everybody to read the Lancet's 2016 Ending Preventable Stillbirth series. It's a series of five papers. It's available for free on the Lancet. The Lancet is a global public health journal, and you can access those articles for free. And there's also an executive summary, which parenthetically ISA had translated into 11 languages. But even if you just read the executive summary, I think that'd be very informative. And perhaps think about having a discussion in your group, support group, of how what you learn about stillbirth at a global or national level might translate into action that you can take at a local level.
And for those interested in learning more about the International Stillbirth Alliance, the website is stillbirthalliance.org. Susanna,
yes,
thank you for using your passions and your skills to help advance this very important topic at the global level. And thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the podcast today.
Well, thank you so much for your interest. And I'm really grateful for that and for the opportunity to talk. Thanks.
That's all for this episode of the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. I'm Chris Duffy. Thanks for listening.